When Sarah was 12, she kept a diary. And like a lot of preteens, she did not want anyone to read it.
Please do me a great big favor by not reading this. I know the temptation is strong, but we can win our generation back by overpowering Satan, right?
Just a little bit of context. I was raised Mormon and in a very small town. January 8th, 1992. Dear Diary, oh, I sure wish I had Kevin Costner as a dad. I could really get started up in acting then.
That's Sarah reading from her preteen diary. And this is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner, and each week on our show, we invite brave Canadians to share their childhood and teenage writing, their diary entries, their letters from camp, their short stories, and their celebrity dad wish lists. This week, recorded in front of a live audience at Broken City Social Club in Calgary, we'll hear teenage mermaid fantasies, passive-aggressive notes to mom, and an ingenious new diet that helps you gain weight. There's a lot to learn from our younger selves. So think about the stuff that you wrote when you were a kid, the stuff you might have tucked away in a box in the closet. And stick around. Back to Sarah. She grew up in a small town, she was raised Mormon, and she wished Kevin Costner was her dad. But as it turns out, a celebrity father is not the only thing Sarah wished for.
My second wish would be that there would be such thing as mermaids, and me, Pam, Nat, Amanda, Audrey, Corey, Lars, Chris E., Dennis C., Ryan, Vince, and Reed were the only ones, and we'd be able to breathe in water and air, and no humans that would hurt us would ever, ever find out about us, and we could reproduce and start a world of mermaids. My third wish would be for... My third wish would be for peace everywhere. Other wishes would be, if one of us mermaids, mermen, came out of a lake, we could turn into humans again and we'd be able to fly. Chris would be my mate and he'd treat me with loyalty and respect. And he'd love me very much. And none of us would ever get cold underwater. We'd live on seafood, in brackets, sushi. All the females would be beautiful and kind. All the men would be handsome and caring. We would live in underwater caves and seem invisible to any humans swimming in the water. But if we surfaced or the human was out of water, we would be seen. But they would forget everything within 5 seconds. Our families would be the only ones who would know about us until the second coming.
After the show, Sarah and I ducked out onto 11th Ave, and I asked her to reflect on those mermaid fantasies.
I was really, actually very obsessed with them. I have folders and folders of drawings and plans of how we would have survived and the communities and cultures we would have built. I had paper dolls that I would spread out on my bedroom floor. It was very elaborate. I was obsessed with movies like The Little Mermaid and Splash and all those things. I think it was about living in a different world, teenage escapism, fantasy. I guess it was just sort of my expression of angst, and that's just how it manifested for me, was just like, oh, everything would be so much better if I could live in water.
I think that the desire to escape Sarah talked about feels familiar to anyone who is ever an awkward teen or preteen. In other words, all of us. But just as often, an angsty diary can be a place to explore the gap between your life as it is and the fantasy you hope will one day come true. Here's Chris reading from the journal she kept the summer she was 16 and went to band camp.
Okay, I don't know if you can see it from there, but this book is labeled Secrets. And I guess the only thing you really need to know is that there's a lot of big talk in this journal, but I actually had zero sexual experience at this time. But I did have some pretty grandiose ideas about how my life was going to turn out. So, for example, on the inside cover, it says, "When I am generations dead, please make my diary into a deep yet widely read bestseller book nicknamed a sequel to Catcher in the Rye." And then I follow it up with gems like this. August 15th. "At what age does everything start being about sex? I have as much sex appeal as a slice of white bread. No jam, not toasted, nothing. Hello, my name is Chris, and I have dance anxiety. I am 16 and a half, and I wish I could just act like dances are second nature to me, but in truth, I've never been to one. I went. At the first chord, I was struck with an unsatiable desire to get out. If I'd have been sure no one would see me, I'd have cried. Johnny G asked me to slow dance. I suppose you don't know how to slow dance, but I made him spice it up a bit, as shuffling your feet in a circle isn't graceful, beautiful, or fun. He was gallant enough not to grab my ass, and when I ended up leading, he said it was all right because I'm older, smarter, and have my priorities straight. I told him I didn't go to dances due to scheduling conflicts with Star Trek."
I've been hosting these live shows for years, and I've noticed that certain formats are always popular. Diaries are very common, so is teenage poetry. But sometimes a reader brings something a little different to the stage.
Evan is going to do something that is really near and dear to my heart. Who here growing up had their own quote-unquote radio show that they made on cassette tapes? Anybody? Evan had one of those. Evan had a radio show that he did as an elementary school student, and his radio station was called FRFE, which stands for Fun Radio for Everyone. He has transcribed some of the audio cassettes, and he's here to read them to you. Please welcome Evan.
Here we go. This is the newscast from FRFE. So it opens with an announcer's voice that says,
"And this is the news."
And this is the news with Chilson Wilson. No, this is Tom Thompson with the news. And then the news comes in. This is Tom Thompson saying, "Well, hello there, people."
"I am Tom Thompson.
I am Tom Thompson. I am the one who will be doing the news."
"I don't know who will be doing news."
"Wait a minute.
Wait.
Someone's at the door."
"Just a minute. Someone's at the door."
And then there's a knock. "This is your worst nightmare." And then Tom Thompson is back. "Who are ya?" And the guest says, "The tax man."
"The tax man."
Tom Thompson, "Oh!" And then there's a tape clip, like the tape has stopped. And then it starts again. "Oh, darn." And I hit the desk. "I forgot to pay my taxes." "If you don't pay your taxes, you will get in trouble." "What happens if I don't?" "Oh, I'll sock ya." And then the announcer cuts in again. "And the news is now over. And now, it's gonna be the newsman's horror show."
"The newsman's horror show."
"What happens if I don't?" "I'll pock ya. Just like I am now." And then you see her hitting in the background. "Whoa, that's smart. What'll I do now? Anyway, what's your name, tax man?"
"What's your name, tax man?"
"I'm IRS.
IRS. Oh, darn.
Oh, darn. I better get on my skateboard. I thought this was going to be the news, man." And that was it. That was the newscast on FRFE Radio.
Evan, you can hear him on FRFE. Tune in.
The This is Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids. I'm Dan Meisner, and if you live near Winnipeg, Ottawa, or Montreal, we have a live show coming your way this summer. So, if you have something you wrote when you were a kid, or you want to be part of our live audience, visit our website. You can sign up to read or buy tickets to the show at grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. That's grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. In every city that we visit, certain themes emerge. Some of those themes are predictable. Teenage love, angst. But in Calgary, a surprising theme emerged. Passive-aggressive notes to your mother. First up, here's Kirsten.
Dear mother, ever since I supposedly spilled the glue, you won't even talk to me. For instance, just now Mark asked you where you were going and you said to Nelly's and I asked why and you just said to get eggs in a quiet, sour voice. So if I don't talk to you for the rest of mine and your life, you know why. Kirsten, P.S. I love you even if you hate my guts.
Kirsten spelled out pretty clearly why she's upset in her letter. But our next reader, Brenda, was a little more oblique in her displeasure with her mother.
I remember this quite clearly when this happened. I was in grade 3. I remember my mom got mad at me because I had ripped a hole in my dress. And I felt that it wasn't my fault, but she, of course, felt that it was. And then it was also her birthday, so I had to make her a card. The front of the card has a picture of a scowling lady with her hands on her hips and a little girl with a hole in her dress kind of looking like this. And my sister is off, almost off the page, kind of giggling. At the top it says, "You're the sweetest person." Inside I taped a package of sugar from a restaurant. And I'd been going to Sunday school a lot at this point and thought of the perfect Bible verse to give my mom the message. "Dear Mummy, for all have sinned and come short of the glory of God." Love, Brenda.
Most professional writers have been writing for a long time, in many cases, since childhood. Our next reader is Derek Beaulieu. Today, he's the Poet Laureate of Calgary. But for us, he brought along a selection of his earliest work.
So I'm going to start with two short poems that I wrote in grade 4. The first one is a classic. It's entitled, "Because I Am a Human Being." I'm not sure what the alternatives are, but, you know, "I can walk a country mile and do anything with style. I've got appeal because I can feel." The teacher has written "good" next to that. "I can run and have lots of fun. I can go skiing just because I'm a human being." So the second one actually has a story behind it. When I first submitted it in, so I was in grade 4, ironically now, the teacher has written at the bottom of the poem, "Poet of the Month." Yeah, exactly. So I wrote this in grade 5 in retrospect about this poem I wrote in grade 4. The poem, "Totally Alive," yep, was eventually incorporated into a spring concert by my grade 4 English teacher, Mrs. Joy Allen, in Brayside Elementary School. Upon reading "Totally Alive," Mrs. Allen was deeply moved and wrote into my notebook, "This makes me feel like weeping. It's so fantastic." On the night of the spring concert in May 1983, the Lemon Lollipop debuted. When 4 youngsters fell asleep one night, they found themselves in Lollipop Land. All of the inhabitants of Lollipop Land were very kind and considerate lollipops, except one, the lemon lollipop. The lemon lollipop was very grumpy and did not want the children returning home and did everything in his power to prevent them from waking up. The other lollipops were able to make the lemon lollipop change his mind. They were also able to change the lemon lollipop's terrible self-image. When realizing that he was so sour, excuse the pun, that's what it says there, he became very happy that he had seen the light and burst into the poem, I Am Totally Alive. Ironically, I auditioned for a role in The Lemon Lollipop, the play that was actually based on the poem that I wrote. I did not get a speaking role. I was a tree. So, totally alive. I am totally alive, so happy, loving, caring, so totally alive, so terrific, so marvelous, I am totally alive, so zesty, so wonderful, so open, I am so totally alive, so super bright, I am totally alive. Thank you.
There, ladies and gentlemen.
When Amy was in grade 7, she had an intense growth spurt.
I was about 5'11", 80 pounds, very uncomfortable to look at, and I wanted nothing more than to gain weight. Like, that's all I wanted, was just to get fat so I could fit in with all the other kids.
So to cheer herself up, Amy wrote a fake meal plan.
On the cover it says, lose weight? No. Gain weight? Yes. I wrote that extra large for effect here. Okay. Do you want to gain weight fast? Well, you can. In less than 7 days and under $100, you are guaranteed to lose weight. Oh, gotcha. I meant gain weight. Skinny people, your dreams have come true. Look at the week-long plan. And I have a 7-day plan, meal plan, broken down here. Every day has a different theme. So Monday's theme is bacon. So breakfast is 10 pieces, toast with butter, of course, eggs, 3, milk. And then for lunch, 3 bacon sandwiches, banana milk. Bananas I've spelt differently every single time on here. Dinner is 3 bacon pitas, I guess, for variety. Tuesday's theme is turkey. Wednesday's theme is sausage. And then Thursday's theme is, of course, lard. So it just says to substitute every meal that I've just said with 300 milliliters of lard, which is incredibly specific. So Friday is steak, so steak and potatoes for breakfast. Saturday's theme is McDonald's. So I guess I know the deals off by heart. So breakfast is Egg McMuffin deal. Lunch is 5 cheeseburger deal. And of course, for dinner, a Big Mac meal. And then of course, for Sunday, I have, it says, a cleansing day so you don't have a heart attack. And essentially, I've just written fruit and vegetables. And just a side here, I've asterisked all the milk and said, may substitute for beer. Which is, I guess that's foreshadowing of some sort. Thanks.
part of what makes this stuff funny is that a lot of it is private. Most of what people read on stage was never really intended to be read in front of an audience, and the simple act of taking something so private and making it public usually gets a laugh. Sometimes we laugh at the things that we used to believe and how silly they seem now, and sometimes we're laughing at just how different we are today from who we used to be. Sometimes, when we're laughing, I think it's easy to forget that a lot of this stuff was originally pretty serious. We forget how sincere those original emotions were, how strongly and how deeply we felt things when we were young. Take Chelsea. When she was in high school, Chelsea made a mix CD for her boyfriend, and it included full liner notes that explained each and every song she chose.
Okay, first track was Painted on My Heart by The Cure. The first time things slowly started happening with us was at Gone in 60 Seconds. And this song was in the movie. That was the day I found out you liked me. You gave me your coat when we were outside smoking weed. Everyone kept bugging us and making it so obvious we liked each other. After that night, everything happened so quickly. Number two, American Psycho by Treble Charger. This song doesn't really have any significance except for having the same name as a movie we all watched at Stan's house one night. Before that, I liked you, but I wasn't really ready to be in a relationship. That night totally changed my mind. Gimme That Nut by Eazy-E. So you could interpret the significance of this song in a few ways. But for me, it will always remind me of my 16th birthday.
No.
Plans got kind of messed up, but we ended up at Adam's. We listened to the song over and over again, and I got to see you really drunk. It was so cute. Angel by Aerosmith. I remember standing in the drama room where our backpacks were, and you hugged me, and you started singing this song. I freaked out because nobody has ever heard of it. Take Me Down by The Sneaker Pimps. Grade 11 drama is one of the main reasons we're together. The semester we worked on our Remembrance Day play together, and this is the main song in it, so we had to hear it every day during rehearsals. This song always takes me back to where it all began. Guilty Conscience by Eminem. This song is another one from drama. It was from a play that you did when you rapped in it with Matt. I remember the day so vividly. You were really depressed and everyone kept asking you what was wrong. Then, after everyone loved your rap, you got so happy and had a huge smile on your face. I love to see you smile. Bow Wow by Lil Bow Wow. Ha 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 ha, I just had to put this in to piss you off. Come Together by The Beatles. In January, you came over to my house when my mom was out and I was really sick. You kept wanting to make out, but I didn't want to kiss you and get you sick. We listened to The Beatles and I finally gave in when the song came on and you started singing to it all sexy and stuff. And then the last song was The Score from Forrest Gump, and there's no explanation for that one.
In the room, we all laughed, and you could hear Chelsea giggling along at some of the things that she wrote. But afterwards, we were out on the street, and Chelsea and I talked about what that mix CD and the boy that she made it for meant to her at the time.
I thought that it was going to be the guy who I was going to marry. So I think I was actually like putting together this playlist as in like, oh, we'll look back at this 20 years from now and we'll laugh and we'll cry and it'll be this really special thing. And we actually ended up breaking up like 2 weeks after I gave him this CD. And yeah.
it strikes me that the feelings that we had and the feelings that you were expressing and the reasons that you had carefully put this thing together, like, those were real.
That's the real thing. Like, I wasn't putting it together being like, oh, this is really funny. That's going to be really cute and funny. It was like, this is actually how I feel. And, like, remember that song that played when we were at the movie and that was the beginning of our life together. Like, that was actually how I was thinking. And I had this thing laid out and it was like, this should be song one. No, scratch that. This is number two. This is number three. Like, it was all went in a certain order for certain reasons. Like, it was very, very honest. And it's funny how quickly that becomes just kind of silly. But at the time, it was not silly at all. Like, it was very, very serious. But it really actually, going back and reading all these entries, like, I was 15, 16 when this diary was written, and it's just kind of sad a bit. Like, it's written in this fuzzy Winnie the Pooh diary, but I'm trying to be this, like, grown-up adult writing about love and feelings, and it actually makes me a little bit sad, because I'm like, I should have just been a kid, and I should have just been, like, making these playlists for my girlfriends and, like, having fun with it, and I was trying to be so serious and so grown up when I clearly was not that yet. And I think that was sort of the thing that struck me the most.
That's Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids for this week. Our show was recorded live at Broken City Social Club in Calgary and produced by Allison Broverman and me, Dan Meisner. Our music is by Lullatone. You can listen to episodes of Grown-Ups Read Things They Wrote as Kids and subscribe to our podcast at cbc.ca/grownups. And if you want to find out about our upcoming live shows in Winnipeg, Ottawa, and Montreal, if you want to buy tickets or you want to sign up for our email newsletter, visit our website, grownupsreadthingstheywroteaskids.com. You know, we're always on the lookout for a new catchphrase for the show, something that really explains what we do here in a nutshell. And I think this week we may have found a contender. Let's try this out. Grown-ups read things they wrote as kids.
Monday's theme is bacon.
I'm Dan Meisner. Thanks for listening.